shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
The Herald of Truth broadcast is on the air, a program of spirit and truth dedicated to teaching the way of God more perfectly. These broadcasts contain keys to help unlock knowledge and reveal hidden truths of the Bible in these last days. Christians called to a higher level of understanding will be given Bible-based solutions to their personal as well as national problems. They will want to find out more about their part in God's plan. Our mailing address is Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, and will be given again at the end of this broadcast.
Good evening. This is Brother Mike welcoming you to another one of our first of the month Kingdom Concepts broadcasts. We're being heard tonight over radio station WWCR, 4.840 megahertz and 5.890 megahertz as transmitters 3 and 4, and also radio station WBCQ, 7.490 megahertz. You can go to our website, kingidentity.com, KingIdentity.com. You'll find streams for both of those stations, or you can scroll down to listen live under the Kingdom Concepts and get a live stream there. If you would like to participate in tonight's broadcast, the number, which is toll-free, is 877-924-7722. You can remember that by 877-YAHS-RACE. Last month, my guest, Pastor James Wesley Stivers' broadcast was well received. He's the author of both The Biblical Case for Polygamy and also his new book, The Family Abbey. And we covered a lot of material, but there was a lot more to cover. So therefore, I've asked him to come back on the broadcast tonight and explain more and take your questions and comments and so on. So I'd like to welcome to the broadcast Pastor James Wesley Stivers.
Thank you, Brother Mike. I appreciate it. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to share my message with the with your listeners and to hopefully offer some new insights and what we can find in the Scriptures.
Well, I'm sure we will. Why don't you start by kind of summarizing some of the material that we went over last month before we get into new material?
Well, certainly. You know, the idea of a family abbey is, I guess, is kind of some terminology there that we're not used to using. But it was something that came to me when I was doing my research on the old Celtic Church, Celtic Christianity that characterized ancient Britain and the surrounding islands such as Ireland and so forth. There was a different kind of church structure that was practiced by the Celtic Christians as opposed to what we call the Latin Christians, or the ones that were influenced by the kind of Christianity that formed within the Roman Empire. And if you recall, we talked about how that the kind of Christianity that was within the Roman Empire was more imperial in its nature, in the sense that you had bishops and the clergy were not married men. Maybe they were in the beginning, when the closer you get to New Testament Christianity, but later on they were not married men. And in fact, when the Christian religion became recognized under the reign of Constantine, basically the leadership of the church was taken over by the imperial bureaucracy. And the imperial bureaucracy were usually the eunuchs of the imperial court. And so that was why the idea of a unmarried priesthood was introduced into the Christian church, was so that they could accommodate the people that the emperor wanted to lead the church. And the emperor, of course, wanted to treat the church like it was just another branch of government under his control. But of course, the Celtic Christians, of course, there were Celts in Gaul and elsewhere, but they were subjugated by the Roman Empire. The ones that were not subjugated in what is now Scotland and Wales, and parts of Britain and Ireland, they held to the traditions that they received from the apostles and the first messengers of the faith that came to Britain in the first century, and they were still very family oriented. And since those societies were tribal, with leading fathers being the ones that would be leading the respective clans or tribes in various villages, areas of the country, it was a natural thing for them to assume the spiritual leadership of the people they were responsible for. So while the Latin variety of Christianity was more urban and cosmopolitan and was relied more upon a professional class of clerics, and the Celtic lands, the leaders were very often just family men. They were fathers. And that was the tradition that they held on to for many centuries. So when I was doing all of that research, I began to realize that, hey, this looks like something that we see in the Old Testament, where the men of God were priests and kings of their own households. It was something that I thought deserved further investigation. And so that's what I tried to introduce to people last time. Many people associate the word abbey with monastery, and that's what they became later on when the Catholic Church took over much of the Celtic ecclesiastical organization, and that happened during the late Middle Ages. But in the earlier years, it was still family oriented, and so when we talk about family abbeys, we're talking about not monasteries, but we're talking about families that will take all or part of their family estates and dedicate it to a spiritual calling, to a spiritual mission. And so I want to encourage people today, for many years, we have been involved in the homeschooling movement, and we've home educated all of our children, and it was a natural thing for us to add home worship onto our homeschooling. And I think that I would encourage people to take a closer look at that. And once upon a time, say about 20 years ago, there was some serious talk about the idea of home churching. But there were some writers, theologically conservative writers, that wrote against it. And one of those writers happened to be the very prominent, prolific author, Dr. Gary North, and he wrote a book condemning the patriarchal movement and the assumption of spiritual responsibilities by fathers. He believed that all of that has to be given over to an ordained ministry. And the focus of his attack was the Reverend Bruce's Rushdoony, who was very friendly to the idea of home churching. And a big part of my book on family abbeys is discussing the point-by-point arguments involved, pro and con, for the idea of family abbeys. And, of course, one of the big things that people have complications with is this idea of apostolic succession. Somehow they believe that the minister that stands up in the pulpit is somehow connected to the apostles through some process of ordination or blessing or something that's been passed down from generation to generation. A thing that I point out in my book is the idea of apostolic succession, even though it's an attractive and charming concept. Really, I don't think is a biblical concept, because the succession that you see in the scriptures is from covenant fathers to their obedient and faithful covenant sons. And they ordain their sons to carry on the covenant and to pass the covenant blessings on to their descendants from generation to generation. And the mission of the apostles were very important. Their ministry was to proclaim the gospel and to start congregations wherever they went. But ultimately, they were in a work of restoration, and they were attempting to reconstitute the house of Israel again and the eldership of Israel. And we can get into the history of that if you want to, but I think we ended up last time talking about the institution of marriage and how the institution of marriage has changed significantly in this country over the years. And so I'll just kind of leave it there. If there was something I missed, be sure to call it to my attention.
No, I think you pretty well covered it.
Okay.
I might mention that the early church, according to the Bible, a lot of them met in homes. You can tell by the description. And
yes.
Back, oh, say 100 years ago, give or take, they always have family Bible readings. The father would read the Bible, maybe after supper or something like that. Everybody would gather around the table. And while I'm not familiar with it myself, but I've heard a lot of songs talking about the family altar, so a little more traditional way of life among our people has been in the home. And one of the problems with the institutionalized church is not just that it's more based on the institution than the teachings, but they've departed from the faith completely. It's heretical, just like the establishment schools are now, which is why a lot of people have gone to homeschooling. They're,
yes,
you know, a money-making religious business that's providing entertainment, not too much more.
Yeah, we did discuss that a little bit, too, and, you know, I think that it corresponds with the prophecy in the Old Testament where, I believe it might be Amos, where he says that he would be sending a famine for the hearing of the Word of God. And in our world today, you know, the sorry thing about it all is a lot of the criticisms directed toward Christianity today are justified because the representatives of Christianity are so foolish in their representation of the faith. They are incoherent. They are illogical. They pick scriptures out of context and try to impose that interpretation on society, and they don't have a completed understanding of biblical doctrine, and so they look foolish in the eyes of the world. And, of course, that brings shame and disgrace to Christ because of that poor representation. So, you know, a lot of what passes today is what I call theopop. It's a crafting of the Christian faith to please people, to make them want to be Christians because it's so fun and so cool to be Christians. And, you know, the irony is that the learning of virtue comes through forming character by going through adversity. And the idea that you can have smooth sailing because you're a Christian, that's a misconception that people try to propagate. And really, Christ has called us to carry a cross, which in the context of the time that he lived in was a form of shameful execution. And so the idea of self-sacrifice is a concept that's lost to our society today. They all want the blessings of the faith, but they don't want to go through the dedication and the sacrifice needed to get those blessings. And, of course, in my mind, this is what's corrupted the institution of marriage. Like what I tell my sons, it's not meant to be easy. Marriage is, you don't necessarily get married to torment yourself, but the recognition is that when you get married and you make a lifelong commitment to someone else, you recognize that when you're starting out in that relationship, that you have a lot to learn, and about yourself as well as about your spouse, and you have to grow in your character, and the opportunity of marriage is really there to make you a better person, not to bring you happiness. And because so many people think that marriage is there to create happiness for them, and well, as soon as the other person doesn't make them happy anymore, well, then they're ready for a divorce, because obviously, you know, they don't love each other, and how can they be happy if they don't love each other? And so they want to get a divorce, and maybe they'll find happiness with a different person. So this is the concept that is propagated in our society today, and you know, Christianity tries to placate that by introducing a religion that doesn't require self-sacrifice.
Well, part of that would be taken care of in the patriarchal family, where the father trains up his sons, and daughters do, as far as that goes, and they become advanced to where at some time the son can become, well, biblical word is adopted in the King James, but it's a placement as son, as having full authority. And the family abbey I would see as a basic building block of the kingdom. Would you like to describe maybe a typical family abbey of the biblical family, what it might be like in organization, et cetera, and also comment on the patriarchal family?
Well, I could try my best. That was the purpose of my book. I realized that the idea of the abbey is something that we're trying to recover, because we don't really see any examples of that to speak of in our world today. I think that one of the big issues that the negative consequences of not being connected to the land is something that has harmed our society today. Abraham is an important figure in getting a biblical understanding of what an abbey is. And in fact, the word abbey can be drawn from the name of Abraham, because the word abbey comes from the Aramaic and Hebrew Abba, which means father. And Abraham is a word that means the father of the people. And so when we talk about abbeys, we're really talking about the fathers and the people that they are the father of. And when we talk about Abraham, of course, we know that the biblical story says that he had children late in life. But from all indications that I could tell from researching the scriptures, Abraham inherited the abbey of his father, and that was why he was able to command a host of 300 fighting men, who obviously must have had families of their own. So, you know, we're seeing here then that an abbey, at least within the context of in the patriarchal period, was a self-sufficient economic unit with its own magistrate, someone who had judicial authority, which would have been Abraham, of course, and it had it provided a spiritual community. The abbey did. The people didn't have to go off to a temple or to a shrine. They didn't have to. You know, today we would go to a church, but at that time, the patriarch, or what we would call within an abbey system, an abbot, would be the person that would lead the people in spiritual worship. So I think that when we talk about abbeys, we're talking about a social unit that's self-sufficient spiritually and economically and also socially. This is something that is foreign to our world today, but it wasn't so much of a foreign concept to early American settlers who moved out to the frontiers. And very often, the homes, as you described, people worshipped in their home. They were out on the frontier. They didn't have churches, and they may be visited a couple of times a year by circuit rider preachers. But otherwise, the spiritual life and the education of the children were the responsibility of the parents. And then, of course, as areas became more densely settled, then they may form their own churches and different denominations that were proposing or propagating their faith would would move in. But getting back to Abraham, you know, Jesus, when he was debating with his opponents, the Pharisees and so on, he challenged them. He said, if you are the children of Abraham, why don't you do the works of Abraham? Because if you are the children of Abraham, you would do his works. And so what were the works of Abraham? See, that's the thing that, you know, even people that value the Israelite message, we don't pay attention to the way our father Abraham conducted himself. And he was a priest and king to his own household, and that should be our aspiration too, not because we're wanting to set ourselves up as something great. Very often, those kinds of obligations and responsibilities are heavy. And if we want to shirk our responsibility, it's pretty easy just to pass it off and take our families to church and let the preacher take care of all of that. And we don't assume any responsibilities for our family except to keep food on the table. But the Apostle Paul was quite clear that you know, we're supposed to provide for our households, and it's not just food that we're supposed to put on the table. Jesus said that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. So a man who is been given the responsibility of fatherhood is to give spiritual food to his family as well as physical food. And that's what Abraham did. You could see the reason why before God was going to destroy Sodom and Gomorrah, he was discussing with his with the two visitors that were with him that had visited Abraham, and they were, he was discussing with him. He was saying, should I hold back from Abraham what I'm about to do? Because I know that he's going to become a great nation. He's going to command his children that come up after him to keep the ways of the Lord. And because of that, I will be able to pass my blessings upon him and his offspring. So he knew that Abraham was the kind of man that was going to command his children to keep the ways of the Lord. He was going to give them a charge. And it was something that mattered to Abraham. A lot of men today, the spiritual side just doesn't really matter to them very much. And that's a sad commentary of how far, even among the Christian community, how far we've fallen from where we were supposed to be.
Well, they don't realize that their position is both the king of the house and the high priest of their household. And they don't assume either position actually very well. Apparently, from biblical times, you had, like Abraham, who you're talking about, and then Isaac, Jacob, and Jacob became the 12 tribes of Israel, and it speaks frequently of the head of various households and various tribes, so there must be a leadership level on a larger congregational unit, if you'd like to comment on that.
Yes, and, you know, when Moses brought the Israelites out of Egypt, and he was getting ready to lead them into Israel. And of course, we don't need to get into detail all the story of that. But in my book that I wrote on polygamy, in that book, I call attention to the two censuses that are found in the book of Numbers. And we discover there that there was about 600,000, men, that were 20 years old and up. And over, and then we discover that the tribe of Levi was taken to replace the firstborn sons for the work of the temple or the tabernacle as it was at the time. And then I did the calculation in my book, because the book of Numbers in Numbers chapter 3 tells us that there were 22,273 firstborn sons. Well, I argued the point that that would be a clear indication that there were 22,273 families in ancient Israel, the 12 tribes of Israel that came out of Egypt, because a man cannot have more than one firstborn son, obviously. So, you know, and so, arguing from that point of view of 22,273 families to account for over 600,000 fighting men, concluded that there was at least 27 sons per household in the family. Now, we could take that a step further and do a little bit more math in the land of Palestine, and we know that where the 12 tribes first settled in that area, even though God promised Abraham more territory than what the tribes of Israel initially took, but that sliver of land there constitutes approximately 6 million acres. And a lot of biblical scholars figure extrapolate from the numbers that are given in the Bible that there must have been at least 3 million people, men, women, and children, that constituted the 12 tribes of Israel at that time. Well, obviously, if you do the math there, you're looking at 2 acres per person. We might not think that that's very much land, and I think there's a reason for that, but I should point out that the Bible describes the land of Israel at that time was not the arid wasteland that we see today. The land of Israel then was called the land of milk and honey. It was like the garden of God, the Garden of Eden. The land of what's known as Lebanon today had the giant redwoods and cedars that compared to the redwoods that we see in Northern California today. It was a magnificent country at that time, teeming with wildlife, and you could throw seeds into the ground and things would grow bountifully. It was a wonderful place at that time. Today, it's scarcely a shadow of what it was during the time that they came out of Egypt. So it didn't take much to raise your family on small acreage. In fact, in Ireland, back before the potato famine, an Irish family could support itself on an acre of potatoes every year. So in terms of whether it was enough for the people, it was enough. But if you divided that land up according to the families, if you divided it up 22,273 families, you would have a village probably about the size of 130-some to 150 people, and they would be on 270 acres.
Well, of course, there could be bonding between the families, too, which would increase the land area that was to be used. I suppose part of that would come through marriage of the sons and daughters and various types of relationships. In fact, I was wondering, in your concept of the family abbey, a leader of a larger congregational unit than just the patriarch of an individual family, perhaps some single people bonding themselves to a particular family, or even if it's in nothing more than a servant capacity.
Yeah. Well, of course, in those times, you had the cities as well as the countryside, and Israel was divided between the walled cities, and then you had and the ownership of property in the cities was different than the ownership of property out in the country. But what I was trying to point out here was that when Israel was settled, the land of Israel was settled, it was settled by these family groups that were, you know, over 100 people, maybe 200 people, and they had family villages. They were basically abbeys is what they were. Now, a lot of people think, what about the synagogues? Well, you know, the synagogues were a phenomenon that occurred during the Babylonian captivity. And when the Jewish people resettled the land of Judah, they came with Ezra and Nehemiah, and they were of the descendants of Judah, and that's why they were called Jews. When they came down, you know, they were still a captive people, and I think that the concept of the synagogue represents the idea of a captive society, and it's different than what they had prior to the Babylonian captivity, when free men stood on their own land and led their families. During that time, you had family abbeys, but afterwards, the families were fractured, and they were dispossessed out of the land, and so they had to accommodate and try to survive. And the synagogue is really a survival type institution. And unfortunately, the early church quickly adopted that same model. Part of it had to do with the fact that at least the ones that lived within the Roman Empire, they were still a captive people, a lot of times slaves in households, Gentile households would sneak out and attend Christian services at night, and you know, it was still a time of persecution. So the churches were did not follow the biblical pattern that the Israelites experienced when they were free people. And I think that today the idea of having a church still mirrors that concept of a slave society. And certainly in my mind, when I look at the scriptures, the insistence by theologians to deny the right of Christian men to baptize their own children and to administer the Lord's Supper to their families, I think that's basically a denial of our Christian freedom and an attempt to enslave us to.
Go ahead. If you look at the baptisms that took place on Pentecost, there's absolutely no way that the apostles could have baptized all those people. So that means that, for lack of a better term, lay people were baptizing other lay people there, perhaps family heads, as you're referring to. Let me give out our toll-free number again that people can call if they'd like to participate in tonight's broadcast. 877-924-7722. You remember that by 877-YAWS-RACE. If we have some foreign callers, or as far as that goes, domestic callers, if they like, you can call directly at 678-949-5091. I'll repeat that, 678-949-5091. We're at the bottom of the hour, so let me give our contact information and then invite you to give your contact information. You can go to our website at www.kingidentity.com, KingIdentity.com. You can call us and leave a message with it's an answering service at 870-741-1119 and ask for a packet of information. You can also fill out a form on the website, or you can write us directly at Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021-1021, Harrison, Arkansas, it's AR 72602. And would you like to give any contact information?
Sure. I would encourage people, if they would like to contact me by email, they could send an email at churchoverseer@gmail.com. And that's all one word, lowercase, churchoverseer@gmail.com. And then if people want to contact me through the U.S. Postal Service, I would invite them just to contact your ministry, and they could, and then you could pass the information on to me as to what kind of needs
sure.
the inquirer might have.
Sure. Let me give the toll-free number out one more time, and like I said, if anybody wants to contact us tonight via phone, that's 877-924-7722. We were talking just a minute ago about baptism, and I mentioned the day of Pentecost, and you have other comments concerning baptism?
Well, and even if you rely on the writings of the early, what were called the early church fathers. This would be, you know, men like Tertullian and Irenaeus and other early writers of the church. They'll point out that they recognize the lay people could baptize, but in their scheme of things, they required that anyone who was baptized, it would be examined by the bishop and then confirmed before they would receive the communion. I depart from that traditional churchianity concept of communion because in the Bible, Jesus is likened unto the Passover lamb, and the first communion occurred at a Passover meal, Passover service. And I think that when we investigate the idea, the concept, the meaning of Passover, we recognize that communion is really a New Testament adaptation of the Passover meal, and the celebration of the communion ought to be a family or household celebration and not something that's controlled by some church bureaucrat. And then, of course, the biblical teaching about the kinsman redeemer is very important. It's tied up in the idea of communion, and certainly the kinsman redeemer is a family concept. I mean, the very word kinsman redeemer, we're talking about someone who's related to you, taking the charge of watching out after you, whether it's spiritually, whether it's legally or economically. That's what the kinsman redeemer did, and certainly in the Passover meal, the Passover celebration was officiated by the leading male member of the household. So I really don't know where all of this comes from. Well, in a way I do know. I know it comes from what happened when the church was taken over by the Roman bureaucracy. And when we look at Protestantism, Protestantism is what I would call a halfway reformation. We never followed through with it and went the full distance. Too many of our Protestant denominations are wannabe Roman Catholics with just a different label to it. But they still want
to have
the Supreme.
That's what Protestant means. They're just protesting Catholics.
Yeah. I think that I want to challenge the listeners, and of course I invite people to contact me or contact you if they want to get copies of my book. I would say that anyone listening to this broadcast, if they, I would be happy to send them a free copy of my book if they want to receive it. And so I would encourage people to get it and read it and carefully consider the arguments that I offer. We're facing a time when I think that we've just about used up all the spiritual capital that we have inherited in this country, and people are beginning to become so disillusioned that they're turning to other faiths, other religions. And I think that those of us that have a hunger and a sincerity about having a relationship with our Father in heaven, we need to look for a different model, and that was what I did. And the reason why I've written this book and taken the time to be on this radio program is I'm trying to get the word out to God's remnant, because I don't know what's going to happen next. We could face any number of catastrophes that all of a sudden people are going to be forced to begin to rebuild their lives and rebuild their society around them. And do we want to repeat the mistakes of the past, or do we want to try to find what's taught in the scriptures and give God's way a chance in our lives and in our neighborhoods? So that was the inspiration that I had for writing the book.
We've often heard the saying that he works in mysterious ways. And we're also familiar with the scripture that all things work together for good for the elect. And the recent court decisions that have been legalizing the unscriptural homosexual marriages might actually be used to legalize the concept, the biblical concept of polygamy. Would you like to comment on that?
Yeah, I would. And, you know, that's kind of a challenging situation. You know, you don't approve of the one, but yet you approve of the other, and we're trying to understand how this all happens. And the best analogy that I can use to describe it is, for those of us that are trying to be loyal to the scriptures and accept plural marriage as a validly biblical custom, I would liken us to King David wandering with his band of men hiding out among the Philistines. And I would liken to churchianity to the army of King Saul that has just been defeated by the Philistines. And that's why churchianity cannot win any battles legally and politically anymore. Why the compromise continues is because we're talking about King Saul's army. And King Saul, as you know, was a compromiser during the entire time of his reign in Israel. And he had no solid principles based upon the law of God given in the Pentateuch. He was a man that, you know, just went with the times. He just flowed with the flow. And of course, he pursued David, and David was forced to, for a season, to take sanctuary among his opponents, which were the Philistines. And I likened to this, these court decisions. We know that the Bible does not, you know, that the whole idea of homosexual marriage does not coincide with what God laid down as the purpose of the home. And, but yet we're seeing these things come to pass, and I liken that to the fact that God is just judging the corrupt kingdom of the King Saul, which in our day is churchianity, in order to make way for the King Davids among us to arise who love God and want to follow his ways, to give us an opportunity to do that. Specifically, as far as the court decisions that have come down, I, last time that we got together, I mentioned the Cody Brown decision that was passed down by the federal court in Utah, which basically struck down the anti-bigamy laws in the state of Utah. Or I should qualify that and say it left the anti-bigamy law intact. People that want to get a marriage license can't get a marriage license for more than one spouse. But if a person wants to live in a condition of plural cohabitation on the basis of a religious principle, it is your constitutional right to do so. And I would encourage people that if they are moved spiritually by their love and commitment to God to take up the challenge of living that way, I would encourage them to do so because, you know, we want to increase the size and scope of godly families. And as we know, and according to my book, that the research that I did on polygamy, that appears to be the purpose for that institution in the scriptures is to increase the size and scope of the families of believers. So that's where I think we are.
You pointed out a minute ago about how the children of Israel left Egypt in great numbers. Same thing could be done today with, well, the true children of Israel, the white Anglo-Saxon, Germanic, and kindred people, and increase those who are godly, those who try to follow his laws, which is what we really want, the increase of the elect.
Exactly. And I think what the value of this decision that has come down, I think there are too many negative social stigmas associated with polygamy that I don't think that people will want to participate in that kind of way of life unless they are motivated by religious principle. So I think in a way, the way it has come down might have been better had the courts simply legalized bigamy outright. Because if they had legalized it across the board, it would have been an open invitation for everybody to to participate in it. But because they selectively identified plural cohabitation on religious principle, I think that that will serve well as a screening device so that people just won't, in a cavalier manner, decide, okay, well, I'm going to choose this lifestyle. I think people that have serious beliefs and convictions will be motivated and the others will not. I wanted to kind of just... Oh, go ahead.
We have a caller from Pennsylvania. You're on the air.
Hello, Pastor Mike. I'd like to thank you for the broadcast and for having your guest on, and you know, always blessings to both of you. Your guest made a comment a minute or so ago about that we've used our political capital up as, you know, as far as, you know, God and his judgment and what have you. I mean, this is the mystery Babylon situation that has gone on from the time of Daniel. Yahweh gave us a formula of that we have our man, we have our woman, which makes up our household, which makes up our city and our state and our country. Any breakdown of that basic formula crushes society. If you and your guests can have some dialogue here in the remaining minutes about eminent domain, you know, all these UN One World Mystery Babylon Agenda 21 concepts to crush us in relation to, like Isaiah says, you have sold yourself for nothing. The iron yoke and the wooden yoke are people who are blinded, but Yahweh says we're going to wake up. I think we have to unite. If you can have some dialogue on this in the remaining minutes. Also, a very dear friend of mine works for a major bank in Western Pennsylvania here where I'm from. He's an IT information technology, so this isn't a janitor or anything. They were given a directive a month or so ago where any relation, word or what have you, that they would say to another coworker in the workplace or correspondence relating to that they have a wife or that one has a husband offends same-sex partnerships. They have to relate and say that they have a life partner. I mean, this is how America and we have sold ourselves for nothing and stand by this. I'd like to hear your comments, maybe a little direction on this and how we have to unite. And I know there's a lot of people here in Pennsylvania that look forward to your broadcasts and, you know, we'd like to form a stronger union here. So, do you have any comment? I'd love you to share that and you know, help us and the flock and his remnant.
I appreciate your call and your comments. And certainly, as I mentioned earlier, the family is the basic building block to the kingdom. One thing I'd like to comment on is that America, which was founded as a godly nation, is turning from that abominable things like homosexual marriage and everything else. And yet Russia, which went through being ruled by the Antichrist Jews and turning from everything godly, is turning back the other way now under Putin and some of the leadership, which is a very interesting development. They oppose homosexuality and they encourage attendance, at least in the public churches, their Orthodox churches
yes.
over there. I realize that's not as good as the family site.
But you're absolutely right. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
No, you're absolutely right. And when you mention Russia, yes, Putin, you know, today is the perhaps, and you're the expert, not me, perhaps the new prince of Russia. But when we get into and talk about Stalin, remember, arguably a Jew, married to a Jew, Jewish doctors, and look at his death, which was March 1st, 1953, over the Jewish Feast of Purim, which, you know, was nothing but a bloodletting, parading around, hanging the sons of Haman twice, hanging them twice. And, I mean, we're in the shadows here of Purim at this time, and this is just more of the same with his flock, the remnant, has to look forward to with these Jews and this mystery Babylon that's in Revelation. I mean, am I wrong in that, Pastor? And your guest can comment on that, too.
Well, I see the abortions as just the ancient killing of Israelite children as happened in of the Scripture and various other abominable things.
Yes, Pastor.
Pastor Divers?
I don't want to... I'm kind of the person that feels like that... The old saying that goes, it's better to light a candle than curse the darkness. And, I really appreciate the sense of righteous indignation that people have about these things. And I think it's important. But in my mind, there are some things that have to be done first before other things can be done. And the whole idea, for example, of political correct speech has effect because people have lost. I think the gentleman used the term eminent domain. I'm not as sure exactly what maybe he was referring to there, but in my mind, when I think about those kinds of terminologies, I'm thinking about the fact that the American people have lost ownership of their homes, their land, their businesses, and the public square. And so it comes from the fact that we have sold our birthright. Very few of us own our land outright, own our businesses outright. We're all in debt. And so that compromises your ability to express your convictions. And
yes, I agree. I'm sorry. No, my point of eminent domain was in the breakup of the marriage, of the institution, which is legislated, this is United Nations, doublespeak, legislated into our cities, our towns, our states, and what have you. These are barren wound, empty nest people that show up and tell you where to put the stop signs, where, you know, and how you can operate your own business under a government, heavy, heavy taxed operation and what have you, to destroy the cities, put their own people in with legislation, while Satan himself is the prince of the airways, and the people are asleep. I mean, it's a double bind. It's a yoke. That's what I was referring to, gentlemen.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, I do know that a lot of people don't say anything because they're afraid of losing their jobs, you know, and whether it's the minister preaching to his church. I've known a lot of ministers through the years that they don't teach or preach what they truly believe because they're afraid they're going to lose their jobs. And so people have lost a lot of their it just seems like to me that people that have their economic independence are free to be able to express themselves publicly in the public square without fear of retribution.
We only have a couple minutes left, and we have another caller. So
okay,
I'd like
thank
to
you, John.
Thank
you're
you welcome. For calling. We have a caller from Spencer, West Virginia. You're on the air.
Yes, Jim from West Virginia. Look into the International Property Maintenance Code. Look it up, and it's Agenda 21. They can run all the people off the land for any reason whatsoever. It's a million times worse than eminent domain. And one of the definitions of war is to run people off the land. So, yeah, I thank you, gentlemen, for your conversation. Just look that up. It's about the third worst scam on paper in U.S. history. Thank you. I'll sign off.
Well, thank you for your call. We've got about a minute left. Would you like to comment?
Well, I think that any reasonable person should be alarmed at these things that have been going on. But I would just remind people that Abraham lived on the fringes of Canaanite society successfully because he relied upon the providence of God and he was faithful in his household. So I would just encourage people to follow the same path, and no matter how bad it gets, just have faith that God will take care of you, whatever it is that's coming down the pipe.
Well, I'd like to thank you for being our guest tonight. We're unfortunately out of time, but it was another interesting broadcast. So may Yahweh bless you and our listeners tonight.
We pray that your spiritual ears have received today's message and that you are fed with strong meat relevant to solving the needs of our nation and Christian civilization everywhere. Herald of Truth is sponsored by Kingdom Identity Ministries through the financial support and prayers of listeners like you who love the truth of God's Word and want to see it broadcast throughout the land to awaken His people. If you would like a
CD
of today's message, tell us the date and station to which you are listening and send a donation to cover our costs plus help with radio time to Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602. We would appreciate donations made by our international listeners to be in U.S. funds. For a free introductory packet of information, including our doctrinal statement of beliefs, plus lists of books and tapes to aid you in your study of biblical truth, write Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, USA. Or request this material by calling 870-741-1119. That's 870-741-1119. Visit our internet website by going to www.kingidentity.com. Type www.kingidentity.com. We invite you to listen regularly to Herald of Truth broadcast for more dynamic messages proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom at this same time and station.